Supervisor Berg and Supervisor Decker. They have been excused. We have Supervisor Rose, Supervisor Gully, Supervisor Lewis, and Supervisor Beth in attendance. Do we have any citizens' comments? Were any sent in, Kathy?
No.
Do we have anybody here for citizens' comments? Anyone here? Seeing no citizens' comments, I'll close that. Chairman and committee members, thank you everyone for being flexible enough to attend this evening from our snafu last week. I want to let you know that I will not be here for the meeting in August. I have a back surgery on July 27th. If I feel up to it, I may be here, but right now Andy, Supervisor Berg will be chairing, but we will set the schedule, the agenda before I go out on surgery, Director Jansen. Do any committee members have any comments that they'd like to share?
I had submitted some questions to John Jansen and you, and he said they'd be at the August.
Supervisor Beth stated that she submitted some written questions via email and they will be brought forward during the August meeting, so that's noted. Any other questions or comments? I'd like to welcome Supervisor Rose. Thank you for being part of our committee.
Good to be here.
Do we have youth and governance this evening? I see none.
I heard from Kale. I did not hear from Arjun.
Okay. We'll need to follow up with them to make sure that they know that attendance is expected. Okay, did everybody review last month's meeting minutes for June? Do we have a motion to approve?
I'll move to approve.
I'll second.
Supervisor Gully first, second by Supervisor Beth. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Minutes approved. Number five, we have resolution to approve the reappointment of Mr. William Erickson to the Kenosha County Board of Administrative Appeals. Director Jansen.
Thank you. It should be part of your packet. Mr. Erickson would be a reappointment to the Board of Appeals, and as noted in the paperwork that's submitted, the board has not met in the last 2 years, but in order to continue membership, we'd ask that the committee approve him still serving on that appeals group.
Are there any questions for Mr. Jansen?
Discussion?
Yes.
I know both Bill Erickson and Gail Gens. I think they're both very fine people. However, I'm going to ask that both of these appointments be referred back to the executive. Now, this board passed a diversity resolution and a committee to deal with that issue. We don't have to wait for committee reports. I think it is very clear what the direction of the county board was to have more diversification, more people of color. What about Asian people? What about Jewish people on the committees? These are the same appointments, and this would have been an ideal opportunity for the executive to come forward with the commitment that he made and this board made for more diversification. And I'm going to move this evening that both appointments be referred back to the executive to consider more diversification on these committees, not just the routine reappointments. I like Bill Erickson and Gail Gens immensely. They're both good people. But it doesn't fulfill the commitment that we've made and that we ought to carry out and the executive needs to carry out. So I'm going to either vote against both or ask that they be referred back to the executive for some diversification. I don't think we have to wait for your committee to do anything in that regard. We can do it now. And I think we got to speak to the executive loudly and clearly. This is what the commitment that we made and he made. And here we go again.
Any other comments, questions? Supervisor Gully.
So I respect what you're saying. I agree with you in principle. I guess I've asked a few times that when we get the appointments, we're also educated on how many times that person had, like how many appointments they've been given. I know in other times it's been six or seven appointments, and in this case, I would venture that my one hesitation with what Supervisor Rose said is that these people have not actually attended a meeting. So I guess I'm on the fence. I'll say that. I would like to at some point understand how many terms they have served. I would imagine it's probably a few. I think I have more of an issue with that than I do the diversity, but I guess Supervisor Rose made a motion and I did not respond to that, so.
I'm gonna second that motion for Supervisor Rose. I believe that this is a great opportunity to reevaluate whether they've been at a committee meeting or not. I think it is important that we start looking at a new list of individuals, new opportunities to fill some of these positions, whether they serve or not. So I would, I second the motion to refer back. The motion exactly was, Supervisor Rose, can you say again?
To refer back to the executive these two reappointments for consideration for diversity membership.
Okay. Kathy, you got that okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is there, we can do it by roll call. So, Supervisor Rose?
Yes.
Supervisor Gully?
Yes.
Supervisor Lewis?
Yes.
Supervisor Beth?
Yes.
And then Supervisor Belsky, yes. So the motion carries and it will be referred back to the executive. Okay.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hi.
Very well.
Please note that Argent attended at 6:09. So are you making the same motion, or do we need to make individual motions for William Erickson and then one for Ms. Gentz? There's two separate resolutions.
Right. I thought it was included, but just to make it clear, the same motion for Gail Gentz.
Okay. So to make sure that everybody understood that the motion was for Resolution 5 and Resolution 6. Is everybody in agreement? Yes?
Yes.
Okay. Just want to make sure. Okay, and then the next thing that we have on the budget that I'm really looking forward to is the Department of Human Services budget process presentation. And how would you like to handle this, Tammy? Would you like to give the presentation and we hold our questions till the end?
No, I think just giving questions as we go.
Okay.
During it would be the best.
All right, then I turn it over to Tammy Capito.
All right. So I know there's many different levels on what we know on the budget, so feel free to just interrupt me if you have questions. But I'm going to start first with where it's found. So this is the Kenosha County website. And if we click in there under county government, in here we have the budget tab. You would click budget, you would click what year you're looking at, and here are all of our budgets from 06 and on. I've already pulled some up just for time's sake. So when you're actually in the budget book, so this is the big budget book that Supervisor Gully has on the table, you'll receive in November, October.
I have the small.
And we'll go through that one too. So a couple of good pages that I really like is page 24. So this gives the summary of DHS together. So this gives each division and where they were at in 2019, 2020 versus 2021. The little blue box gives it in total what our levy is, what our revenue, bonding, all those different areas. And then from there, if you go down a couple of pages, it gives these really nice pie charts that talk about our revenue. So here, when we look on this one, we look at expenses by department, we are in the orange. So we're that big section there. So we are 43.84% of the whole county budget. But then when we look at levy, so we're same, I'm sorry, that looks yellow up there. We're in the yellow. In that yellow section, the levy, we are only 19.44%. And then when we look at the non-levy funding, you see we're the big piece of the pie. So we are receiving a lot of funding elsewhere. So when we have stuff that comes in our budget, if there's stuff that we're looking at cutting or reducing, a lot of times funding is gonna go with that. It's not like a one for one, okay, let's reduce this expense. There's most likely funding we're not gonna be able to draw down. Depending on the funding source will determine how much. Sometimes it's 100%, one for one. Sometimes it's a funding source that has a match that, you know, so our match portion could come off the budget. So it all depends on what it is and where it is in the budget. So that's kind of the overall for DHS, but then we'll, when you get farther, you get into specifics by division. So I just pulled up the health one just for an example. Each one starts with their mission statement, and then we go through FTEs. So these are the FTEs from, this one's showing 2017 through 2021. So I'm showing you last year's just because we're still obviously working on this year's, and we won't discuss it until after the county exec presents what he proposes.
I'm sorry, what did you call it? The acronym?
FTE, full-time equivalent. Yeah, sorry. So we count FTEs, the Kenosha County employees. So you're looking at it, what it is year over year. After that, we have an org chart. So this will show the org chart for each division, and that will equal the FTEs on the previous page. One thing to note in all of them is fiscal people run up the fiscal pole. So you won't see the FTE counts in the divisions. So like for me, you'll see me in the finance section. But then there's this interdepartmental. So whenever you see interdepartmental expenses, it's just a transfer from one somewhere other department in the county to another department. So it should wash to zero. So it's just a transfer from one to another. So even though my original cost resides in finance, it eventually goes to human services and gets charged in the human services department. So when you guys are approving the budget, the biggest part to look at is the budget resolution. That gives all the details on exactly what you're approving. In there, it'll talk about approving by appropriations. So on the summary page, you can see the different appropriations. So we've got personnel, contractual, supplies, fixed charges. In the budget resolution, which Barna usually presents, it goes in all the details and explains what is allowed and what's not allowed in this budget. And that's really what you're approving. So DHS as a whole, you guys are approving our personnel as a whole, our that appropriation. Our contractual, we cannot go over our contractual amount as a whole for DHS. There is some things, there's more details in the budget resolution as to what the director of finance is allowed to do, like make transfers within the appropriations, and it'll talk about that.
Could you describe what appropriations are?
Yep, those are these sections, personnel, contractual, supplies, fixed charges, grants and contributions, outlay, and cost allocation. And I think, I forgot to pull it up, but in last year's 2021 budget resolution, page 17, it talks about the establishment of the appropriation unit. This document you'll find out on the website in last year's budget time as one of the attachments. I was going to pull it up, but
Does it say who defines the interdepartmental appropriations?
When you say define, like as to what goes into that?
Who determines, say, the appropriations for, I think what you have rent, supplies, there's a section, it's all appropriations in that group. Who determines
yep.
that group?
Well, Patty's ultimately the overseer in the what accounts we use and what goes into each type of account. So usually a business will have like an account dictionary that says, okay, this kind of expense goes to this account. So she's ultimately the sayer, and that is also specified in here that she is in charge of the chart of accounts. But she's also got to follow accounting rules. So as to what goes into personnel, I mean.
But just so everybody understands, mm-hmm. within the appropriations, they just need to meet the bottom line dollar, not the line item. That was a aha moment for me being a new supervisor, because I wasn't aware that as long as it's within the appropriation group, that money can change within the group. It isn't. So say you had supplies at $500. If they needed money elsewhere within the appropriation, they can move that money without approval. Just so everybody understands that. I didn't understand that.
Okay. Is there a limit on how much they can move?
No. As long as it's within the appropriation and if it doesn't go over the bottom line, then they can move it. Correct?
Yes. And as long as it's not a new program. So as long as the intent on what we are providing is the same, if there was a new program that would totally change something, we would have to come in front and explain the new program and get that approved. So as long as it's still the same programs that are in the budget originally.
Right.
So this is kind of more detail on the health division, kind of what Laura was talking about. So like in the appropriation unit of the personnel, it gives all the different accounts that make up that appropriation that are going into that total. And then the revenues is usually second, and usually we have it kind of by revenue source. So you can kind of see on here the bonding, the WIC grant, the K-Life grant. So that gives more detail as to who's funding or what the name of the funding source is that we're getting that funding from. So big thing, so we're already starting the budget process. So normally we get the budget book. So Barna puts together this budget book in end of May, early June. It gives us our rules, what we need to follow. So since I've been here, it's been a cost to continue budget. And it also gives us the personnel costs. So finance department puts together with HR what our personnel costs will be for 2022. Based on what we've already got in the budget, staying at the same level. And then if there's increases in putting that in there, life insurance, health insurance, all that stuff, they work into those formulas. And they also give us any insurances, public insurance, liability insurance, they give us those amounts that we need to put in the budget. So they have oversight over that and tell us what to put in there. Then we have workflow items. So in the workflow is FTE. So if we want to increase an FTE, a full-time equivalent, we don't put it in our budget submission to the county exec. We put it in workflow and it goes through HR. So HR looks at it. Ultimately the county exec will say, yes, we're going to include it, we're not going to include it. But each division will put together what their arguments are for why they need this position and how it's going to be funded and what the cost will be to the bottom line. HR will look at it as well to put that position into what normally this position should be paid, what level it should be at in the pay grade scale. Then we have capital requests. So anyone who has capital requests, that goes through workflow. We put together all of our information. We work with purchasing to get costing, and we submit that through workflow. We don't include that yet in our budget. And then IT requests. So IT requests, those are usually due really early on. We've already had to submit any IT requests. There's a steering committee that goes through the IT request, and they say yes, no, take it out, leave it in. So those are kind of items above and beyond what we are putting in there for our programs.
Yes, before we move on. When you mentioned personnel, so those are incremental positions, or is that when a change in class type would also be requested, or is that a separate process?
So the class type really is done by HR. So they have, I believe they have a third party that comes in and looks at everything every 3 years that, are these guys still at their level? Because I believe they ran into, before I started, an issue where people were way behind. So they have everybody on a rotational every year to look at those positions and are we still within market value on this?
Okay.
So they will make those decisions, so.
Thank you.
The other thing to note, especially this year, is the job center is done by facilities. So facilities handles our location. Facilities handles our maintenance. Facilities handles our cleaning. They're just the experts in it. Renovations, the capital stuff, public works, that's all going through public works. So when we look at possibly renovating the job center, it is fully depreciated. It's past its use for accounting wise, at least. Facilities or public works would be the one to tell you what are the repairs, what stuff, how long is the stuff expected to last, what are the costs for looking at either renovating or looking new, because they have the expertise in dealing with contractors and that's what they do. So even though we may see costs in our budgets for that, they really are the ones who direct those kind of costs. So we're already starting our budget process. All of our division directors are working on it right now. We have to submit to the county exec by the end of this month. In part of our, what we have to work through is, a big part is who we contract with. So we have contractors who come in, we have to get their costs because the non-for-profits, they don't make money, we pay actual costs. So we're working with kids right now, Goodwill, anybody like that.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Okay.
Because if you will pass these around, this is just a prototype.
Okay.
Because I poured over the budget and it's very hard to understand who our service providers are, if that makes sense. Like you just said, like, RKAA, Kenosha Achievement Center, HUD. I mean, there's so many. And so can you, for this budget, put together all of our service providers and what services they provide, and then what their proposed budget amount is, and if they're being funded by levy, federal, state, or county, if there's any kind of grants associated with matching funds, or if it's levy dollars, how many FTEs are within those agencies, and then the type of outsourced service that we're purchasing, because it is considered outsourced, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then the outsourced contract amount, because I'd like to understand the proposed budget amount to what we're paying them and the grants coming in. And then the last increase of the contract, because I know last year was a big deal. Was it Kenosha Achievement Center?
Yes.
Because they were very concerned that they hadn't gotten an increase to pay their staff. So I would like to have all this information. Is this something you can put together, Tammy?
Yeah, I think this is a lot like what Supervisor Decker has requested previously before I started.
Oh, really?
I know this, I believe, it's kind of like this, but like
okay.
A list of providers and that kind of stuff. So
okay.
Yeah, we'll look at that and see what we can put together.
Because I think that would be helpful for everybody here, because especially coming in new, we don't understand all the agencies we're working with and the types of services. And since, what was it, 45% of the budget is human services.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big chunk.
Yeah.
And what was it? I think very little. Is it 17% is levy?
Yes, 17% levy. Yep.
Right.
Yep.
So I think it's important for us to understand.
Yep.
How all these things are funded, so that should questions arise, we on this committee then can answer by looking at our sheet. Because it is hard to find in the budget. So that was my biggest challenge. So thank you for that. Yes?
I hope this year that since we have all this money coming in from the federal government, the over $30 million on the American Rescue Plan Act, that some of that funds go to fund some of these budgets so that we have property tax relief. I believe that money is aimed at that, not for some pet project of somebody. And what reminds me of this was recently Racine has decided to increase the salaries of jailers rather significantly. And Jerry, you wrote about this on an email that supervisors read, and I believe that they're being they're going to be ahead by some $20,000 per year, $40,000 plus versus $60,000 for jailers, and they're going to fund that over a 3-year period by the use of that money. I think that that's something that your department should consider. I'm certainly going to propose that for the county board, but I would hope that you would take that upon yourself and include some of those funds on that levy piece that you just described.
So, out of clarification, is that increases to their salary?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I use that as an example.
Okay.
I know that's not under your rubric, but under the
yeah.
Sheriff's Department.
Well, I just want to say, you know, best practices for, this is, you know, not ongoing funding, is usually one-time purchases. So normally, because it's not ongoing, you don't usually do ongoing, you don't usually cover it with ongoing, because what happens when that funding is gone? Now you've got to find some way to cover that. So
no, I understand
just,
that.
Yep.
No, I understand that, but I think this money was special money appropriated by Congress to defer local costs because of the pandemic. And so that's exactly what we're doing here, not some project that we didn't do any before because we didn't have the funds or the will to do it.
And along with that, and that's why I like the list of services, because I think there's valuable agencies that provide community service, like Racine Kenosha Action Agency, that help people be healthy, that helps them, teaches them about boosting their immune system. Looking at some of that recovery funds, helping out human services and the people that need it now. You know, people that are in need now, and it could be a one-time thing. So, John, I don't know what discussions you've had regarding the rescue plan for human services, but I certainly hope that you're lobbying to get funds for people that we can help now within this crisis. So. Thank you, Tam.
Sure. So different things that we look at. Now, I did talk about the contractor costs. We're asking them to give us their costs right now. Well, a lot of times they don't know how much their insurance is going to increase. You know, they're kind of giving us estimates as well. So, and health insurance has been a huge part in increasing quite a bit. The other things that are a challenge for us, our funding depends on a lot of other things. So the state budget, obviously we look at that closely. We watch that closely because that has a big effect on our budget. The federal, any federal funding, that has a big effect. Any grants available to us that may help us out. The other issue we kind of have is everyone has different fiscal years. So we're on a calendar, so that's the easy one, but the state runs July through June. So we have changes now with the state budget that are effective July 1st that obviously we didn't budget for, you know. So those kind of things will affect our budget that are beyond our control. The federal government, they operate on October 1st through September 30th time frame. So they're on a totally different. So some of our funding runs on these off fiscal periods. So we.
And you do note that though in the budget that if it's I think it was HUD last year, wasn't there a decrease because of money available or
HUD,
something?
HUD was a decrease because HUD is a 3-year contract.
Okay.
And so sometimes we have to hurry up and get services done to maximize how much money we're drawing down. And I think they were closing out a contract, trying to make sure that they could maximize the revenue and getting those services out before they got into the new contract.
So what's really important is to, when you get the proposed budget, you'll get this packet
yep.
from Tammy and John, to read if there's like an increase in cost or a decrease or funding is ending. So, and I think hopefully what I've asked for will help assist on why maybe we need to add in here if the contract is, so if we know if it's federal or state, we know that they're on a different fiscal cycle, so we'll just have to make a note of that, correct? The funding?
Yeah, we could. I don't know where my PDF went. It just kind of went blank.
Oh.
Yeah, we definitely know the timeframe on what some of the funding sources are. Now, some are, let's say, an annual, like September through July,
uh-huh.
August, September through August. But we know it's a pretty much an ongoing, we're going to renew. Some funding sources are highly renewable. Mm-hmm. Some are, we're not sure, we have to apply for the grant. We may get it, we may not get it. Some things are getting more competitive with the grants. So it's a lot, there's a lot of data there. So, I mean, we definitely have that information. That would be helpful.
Maybe when we
it
go
is
in,
a lot.
Maybe when we go into September, September's meeting, we'll talk about the cycles for these and what some of the requirements are. Criteria like for action agency, what are they looking for? What do we have to put in? Like, if, especially if they're being competitive, what is it that we go through to obtain these this funding? Am I making sense?
Yes.
Okay.
We do have a grant writer. That's what I was gonna say.
Yeah.
We do have a grant writer that we work with that helps us write for the grants that we contract with.
And most of the divisions, if it's specific to that division, also have personnel that will assist that person in getting that information together. For example, the Racine Kenosha Community Action Agency runs our WIC program, Women, Infant, and Children program. It is through health. So health writes for it. The pass-through dollars go through health into WIC to provide that service. So, you know, that's just some of what you're talking about, and that's
right.
On a federal calendar as far as funding.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a combination of folks that are involved in that.
But it's like, too, so like for WIC, I would think it would be for the 160 population, or does it just look at poverty levels, or, you know, what is some of that criteria? Maybe you could get
Well, that's really getting into the weeds. That would be, but certainly, yeah, WIC is for
it's
folks
just
that are, yeah, that are folks that are generally on food share and medical
yeah.
assistance. So it is a program for poverty level families
right.
in order to provide nutrition to infants
okay.
and children. So, yeah, there are criteria to a lot of these grants that are very specific on who they can serve
right.
versus we've got money, we can serve anybody. You know,
yeah, so each one has different criteria.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
So with our grant writer, forgive my ignorance, and this isn't a shot at the grant writer, is this just one person that's all he or she does?
No.
No.
She does other things, and there's actually two of them that assist in different areas in writing grants. And when they're not doing that, they're doing program evaluations, measuring, making sure outcomes are meeting what our criteria are and things like that. So they're in what we call our planning and evaluation unit.
Once they have the initial grant done, it's boilerplate. There's just some things that need to be updated year to year, correct?
If it's something that we've been getting over
yeah.
and over and
yeah.
over again, yes.
Yeah.
Modifying to whatever those changes are in the requirements, yes.
Maybe you could, in September, maybe show us an example of one so that we have a better understanding.
Sure.
Okay, thanks.
So this kind of went to one of the detailed pages that Supervisor Belsky was referring to. So usually in government budgets, we talk about the change in prior year to current year. So what we were proposing in 2021 compared to what was, that should say, adopted in 2020. And then we talk about what the change is, what makes that up. So sometimes a lot of times you'll see the same description over and over and over because it's just the normal salary step increase. Or it's, health insurance went up. We're self-funded, so health insurance can fluctuate. For the COVID year, we saw a decrease because people weren't getting out there and getting surgeries done. Are we going to see an increase now because they're happy to still get those done? I don't know. So that's all done up here in finance section, but they give us the amount that we need to budget. So you'll see that same thing. Blood tests. So here we have an increase of $15,200, saying increase in utilization, increased cost for services. So we pretty much just kind of explain what the changes are from the prior adopted year. And then on top of explaining the difference, if there's any new programs, we specify any new programs. So we kind of vet through that. If there's anything that changed from the prior year that we've added on that's not a normal program we use, we will express that as well in the budget process so everyone's aware.
Aging and Disability Services probably has most of that stuff from what I've seen. The most comments like grant fund ending, decrease for reduction of grant funding. So there's all kinds of commentary.
They have a lot of different funding sources
right.
over there.
Right.
And just so Supervisor Lewis knows, when she's showing, so she gets it, like that screen right there, what will say page 202, that's referring to your big county budget book.
Yeah, where to find it
so,
in the big book.
Yeah, we do a much smaller carve out for our presentation, and then the page number refers you back to the big. Big stuff.
You kind of knew, so you probably don't have one of those from last year, but you can have that one. That was an extra. Everyone else should have got them during budget time.
Will there be a new line item for this year for the CARES Act allocation?
The CARES Act allocation?
Yeah, for 20, so that when we show the actual for 2020, 2020.
So are you talking about the money that was earmarked for the COVID
right.
disease? And
all of the CARES funds.
So the CARES Act, there was no allocation. It was
reimbursement.
I just want to, so I know the health division got some money from the state. I would have to double check to see where that got coded to. I don't know if that went to a new account or if it went to an existing account. I feel like if we started a new revenue account for that, I would have to double check.
Yeah, because I'm sure it's going to be asked so that we can see it in human services budget.
So just so everyone's aware, we are mandated, the health division is mandated to handle communicable diseases. So COVID-19 falls under that communicable disease. So we were mandated to handle that regardless of any funding. Luckily, the state gave us more funding. It's part of our state consolidated contract. And I don't know if each division has it, but our big divisions, Children and Family Services, Aging and Disability, Health, all have a state consolidated contract that the state gives us money for whatever they determine. That everything has got many different buckets, many different rules and regulations with each budget we get audited on. So they added money for COVID funding from the CARES Act, but that was to handle programs, that was to handle communicable diseases that we would have had to handle regardless anyway. So, but the revenue wasn't, there was no allocation where you could determine to spend it somewhere else. It was specifically for disease investigation.
So what you did is you said, well, my budget was $2 million for this, but I actually spent 3.1, so I'm asking for a reimbursement of $1.1 million.
They just send us a contract. They increased it by whatever the dollar amount was they determined, and then we draw down, meaning we have to have the expenses. They don't just give us money. We actually have to have the expenses that correlate to that line item,
right. Okay.
And then we draw down that funding.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so different items we look at when we're looking at the budget. And again, so right now we're already, John and I have been budget meetings all week, like from the divisions. But in order to know what to budget, I always start my presentation with where are we at now. So right now we know kind of actuals through May. So they're budgeting off of actuals through May for the 2022. But in my budget presentation, I do this screen that tells you where we're projecting for year end. So this projection is for August 31st, 2020 actuals. And then it says, okay, for 2020, we're projecting to have a surplus of $1.2 million. So I kind of show you first where we're planning to land for that year before I go into, okay, where are we, what are we looking for the following year? But again, these numbers are even newer than the numbers we had to use when we had to put the budget together. So in here though, I do want to, Supervisor Gull, I did request an update on DCFS placements. So we do include that as part of the budget process as to where we are. So everyone got the handout. That is through May this year on where we're projecting for this year, year end. So right now through May, we're projecting a $900,000 deficit for placements. So you will see that what we request for future is going to be around that amount, right? That's our best number we have at the time. But you'll see this placements chart as well in my budget presentation to kind of explain why we're asking for what we're asking. Now, it splits us out by the placement type, the rate, the number of, we used to do days in care, now I've changed that to number of children in care. It's just easier to relate to. And so this will drive what will be requested by DCFS for placements. Any questions on the chart? So right now you can see we're projecting to be 900,000 over budget for 2021. So that's with actuals through May.
So just looking at your chart here, what composes that $1 million deficit?
So the top part is actual. So when you see, you can look at this first section is what we budgeted. Number of children, what we budgeted for, rate. Then we prorate it for 5 months worth. Then we're seeing where we actually, what did we actually have for placements through May? We have a number, what was the actual rate we paid? And then it splits it. So in the next section, it's showing that we actually have a savings, a surplus for the placement numbers, number of kids in each care, but we are over in the rate. So the rates have gone higher than what we had in the budget. So we have a surplus in days of 290,000, but we have a budget deficit of 663,000 in the rate section.
And those would be attributable to what kind of placements?
Each one of these is a level. So regular foster care, if we start looking at that one, regular foster care, we budgeted 203 at $24. We are under what we budgeted, 29.5 children. So we have a savings of 100 and almost 107,000. The rate is under what we budgeted, $1.95. So that equates to a savings of 51,000. So each level, each different placement type has that line, so you can see exactly where it's from.
Which one of these categories attributes to that almost $1 million deficit?
For New Jersey, right?
That is part of it, yes. Residential care.
So that goes from a daily rate of 510 to 640.
Correct.
847,000 versus 940. So that's part of it. Where else?
Corrections.
There's we have a lot in corrections right now. So you can see we have 2.8 over, and that equates to 200 and almost 230,000 more than what we had in placements for corrections. And then the rate has a certain part of that, and that's 94,000 of it. So right there is 339,000.
Last year when we were working on the budget, and I think it was October, November, weren't we 1.3 million out a year ago? And is it possible we'll go to that figure again? I might not remember.
We were forecasting at that time 1.5 million.
1.5, okay.
And we did add in the placements.
And we added some extra. And at that time, this difficult resident was supposed to be only committed for 12 months, then this was supposed to go down to a reduced rate. Obviously, this isn't happening then, right?
If you're talking about the resident, the young person in New Jersey, excuse me, he was probably on a 12-month court order that got extended because his treatment needed to continue at that facility. So the courts, it's a child welfare case that you can go in and say, he or she is not making progress or is making progress, however, we need to continue the court order in order for him to continue in that placement, i.e. the county pays the cost for that care. So that's where that 12 months is probably sitting.
And he did say in the last meeting that he did get approved because he was making improvements between the speech therapy and things,
that it most likely would be extended, his care.
Well, even if he wasn't making progress, his care would have been extended because there's
he needs
to be where he's at right now.
At what age does he not become court committed? Is it 18 or 21?
Well, it depends on the circumstance of the CHIPS, and I think he could at 18 be transferred into the adult system and be under our Division of Aging Disability Services. So it's going to go out of one hand into the other.
Like protective services? Or
well,
something?
No, it'd be probably more of a long-term commitment on, I don't think it wouldn't be a 51, 55 for developmental disability, is that right?
Possibly.
Yeah, so I think he'd be committed under that order. Don't quote me on that, but there'd be an extended court intervention for him.
So this could go on for multiple years at this high rate?
We're hoping that we can get him in as he improves his behavior and stabilizes. We're hoping to get him into a lesser reduced rate facility. Now, as an adult, he may need a group home for the rest of his life because he can't take care of himself. So he's gonna need constant care and supervision. Where that occurs, generally when you get into the adult, if you can stabilize, you would be at a much lower rate than what the residential treatment facility is charging. But yeah, he'll probably be a long-term expense.
Okay. So I guess my big concern is when we looked at this in March, the projected deficit was for the year was $372,000.
Mm-hmm.
And now when we look at it 2 months later, the projected variance is closer to $1 million.
Yeah.
So that trend is more concerning to me than anything.
Yeah.
What's attributing to that?
I would have to, I'm sorry, I didn't compare it to the last time that I...
Yeah, no big deal, but
I would need to compare. What I would do is take both those graphs, like if you have the graph from last time.
I do.
I would look at the rate and look at the placements, and I would see kind of which one is driving that. I don't know, I don't remember.
I mean, it's multiple levers, so it's going to be...
I think in March there also was a number of youth sent to juvenile corrections that we probably, presented, didn't have that, you know, that hadn't occurred yet. So there was kids involved in stealing cars and a weapons charge that led to that number all of a sudden increasing, which is certainly a very expensive placement also.
So let me just ask, and this is going to sound like a stupid question, but like in my business, this would be crisis time. Because we know now that this is, you know, we anticipate it being $1 million deficit, so that's, I mean, the human services budget is $103 million or something, so that's,
million, yep.
You know, approaching a percent. Where does that coverage come from?
Well, I mean, we have other divisions that might be seeing a surplus.
Right.
So that helps to offset it. And then we'd be looking at finance, you know, to help cover it. These services are mandated. We don't,
right.
You know, and
right.
It's court ordered. So, you know, the judges ultimately make the decision on where the children go.
Where does the funding come from then?
The funding comes from levy. We do get some other funding, like we get a basic community allocation that comes from the state that we get to cover countywide services. But for the most part, it doesn't increase because we have more people in placements. You know, that it is what it is.
Yeah.
Well, and it's not a dollar for dollar either. So
right.
The state isn't giving
static.
Us money to cover all these placements
no.
100%.
Yeah.
So therein lies some of it. And we've historically, for the past several years, have been able to cover these deficits, whether they've been in Children and Family Services, or sometimes they're over in Division of Aging and Disability Services because of the behavioral health, it's, you know, state hospitalization
right.
rates that drive their numbers sometimes. So it's been, those two have kind of balanced each other out over the years, and we haven't had to go in front of finance and say, yeah, knock on wood, to say we need money to cover this because we've been able to do it.
Has it been trending up though, and have we seen a spike because of COVID? Or are we at a steady rate?
DCFS the last couple years has been trending up, but before DADS was trending up as well, and now they're starting to trend down, so they're kind of offsetting each other.
Okay.
And I haven't done a trending like over decades, which would probably be interesting to see it going up and down. You
yeah.
know, I think they tend to trend up and down. So while it's got to go up with cost and inflation and all that stuff, costs are increasing, it's just it is.
I can tell you from a very historical perspective,
back in the early 2000s, it wasn't unusual for us to have 40 kids in corrections. And now that number is somewhere around 7. You know, so you can see how we've greatly reduced that.
Yeah. Oh, because that's the, I mean, that's where the cost.
And part of that is, you know, I think good programming that we provide in our community, yeah. A change in philosophy, you know, the whole trauma-informed care message that's getting out there, keeping kids and their families working on their issues here versus shipping them off somewhere. And historically, some corrections hasn't always had a good track record of turning somebody around and stopping them from recidivating. And you see that in the adult system also. So we try to do everything we can to keep them out of there. And thankfully, yeah. Even though this is an extremely high number, the number has reduced. Now, I think we'll probably stay in that 5 to, and if it's a really bad period of time, maybe up to 10 range in corrections. That seems to be kind of a trend in the last several years. But certainly with us keeping that number low, keeping in touch with those institutions, because once you get sent to corrections, the state oversees that while you're there, even though the county pays for it. But we just don't ignore those kids. We have workers going up there, talking to them, making sure they're staying on track, making sure that we're holding the institution also accountable to the services they say they're gonna provide, and then participating in their staffings and hopefully getting them released. But on average, they're spending about 6 months once they go up there.
It's gonna be important for you to highlight the levy cost, the required placement, the court ordered placement and levy expenses at budget time when you propose this, so people understand, the rest of the supervisors understand that, you know, we're not getting funding from the state for this.
Very little.
Yeah.
Because that's literally where the doubling trend comes from, that, and it's that at end of March, it was average daily placements and corrections was 5.3, and now it's 7.8.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, almost $250,000 just from that.
And there's three children.
Two placements.
There's three children. There's three children in one incident that makes that up. Like three in one incident. So, you know, sometimes it's just not a straight line kind of item.
On this corrections, state prisoners, adults, are paid for by the state, but juveniles are paid for by the county. And that's something that we ought to be asking our legislators to change. If you go to a state institution, they say as an adult, state pays it. I don't know why we pay it for corrections because of their youthful age. I mean, it's always been that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably started out that way because you send somebody up there and it was $50. Some very small number. Now you're talking about big numbers for a few people.
Mm-hmm.
7 people, what does that occupy? 7.8 people, $728,000.
Mm-hmm.
We should be asking our legislators to change the law. Let the state pay for that. This is a state institution. They regulate the rates, they regulate what's done, they regulate how long they're there. They should pay for it.
I think we should have.
I agree.
Yeah. That's something we ought to. I'm sorry. We should, when we meet with the legislators, we should make a list of these things.
Yeah, I'm writing this one down.
Yeah, we talk about it here and then meet with them, and we forgot about this.
Put on state hospitals too on that list.
Yes,
state
exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a whole list of these kinds of things.
Yeah.
With send them to Mendota. What does it cost at Mendota?
$1,100.
I was going to say
$1,200
for. I was going to say $500.
No.
Yeah.
I wish.
Yeah.
Right. How is the Lake County process working?
Moving. It's
good.
Moving. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Back then, did you say average daily placements were 40?
In corrections?
Yeah.
Yeah. We had, at times we had up to 40, over 40 kids in corrections.
So then, how much did that adjust like the actual expenditures? Was it close to the same or?
No, I think it was a much lower rate. Not your $50 a day, but
I'm sure the rate
was
a lot lower.
Yeah, I don't remember what the rate was back then. I mean, it's skyrocketed in the last several years, though. They have taken it up and up and up and up. So it was still a very expensive line. Yeah, the state sets that rate.
Yeah.
The state sets the rate.
State should pay.
State sets, the state sets the rates for residential care, foster care, group homes, treatment foster care. And I think they have to approve the rate in the ACE program, which is Alternatives to Corrections Through Education that Racine runs, that we try to get kids that are, look like they're heading to corrections into that program, because it's much more effective, and it's, as you can see, it's 270, well, close to what, 285, 286 a day.
And these guys are incarcerated, right? Like,
yes.
They're on average, how long does it stay then?
Right now, it's on average about 6 months, but it's not, before, I think it was anywhere from 8 to 10 months, so. The state had a lawsuit filed on them several years ago on the juvenile correction where they had to do some things differently. So they brought in more training and more folks that had expertise in dealing with kids that are having issues like this. So perhaps that's why they've reduced the length of stay. But they're the ones that determine when the kid gets out too.
Yeah.
I don't know if any of you spend much time looking at this, but this shows the difference in the last 10 years with the state and federal government has given us, and we're down to 26% right now of them helping us with these programs compared to over 40% 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe that our legislative body in Madison need to think of rethink what they're doing.
Exactly.
Maybe we can bring them in. Maybe we can invite them to the September meeting and have this discussion with them.
Good idea.
So let's put that down for September. Send an invite to Rep. McGuire, Onstad, Kirkman. Who else is in our area?
Wirch.
Wayne Wirch. And Wayne Gard.
Isn't there another fill out in part of Kenosha County and Lake Geneva?
Tyler.
That's it. Tyler. That's his first name. You're on a first name basis.
Is it Mason? No.
We'll invite them to the September meeting.
That's close.
And we'll present numbers. You'll have numbers by then, right, Tammy?
For?
September. Updated numbers.
For placements?
Yeah.
Yeah, so if it's the September, we would probably have through July then.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Tyler August.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's close.
Yes.
I'll send out the invite with John. You want to do that jointly?
Sure.
Okay. Okay. Thanks.
All right. So just kind of going through my notes because I'm trying to see what we hit and what we didn't. But so basically, the county exec will present the proposed budget in October, and then we go through all of our committees. So different divisions may have different committees, oversight committees that go into more detail. You know, we have the Board of Health, so they'll look at the health budget. Well, they'll get presented. The Brookside Board of Trustees, they'll look at Brookside and Willowbrook, our nursing home and assisted living facility. Then we have Commission Aging and Disability and Mental Health, AOTA Services Committee. They will look at our aging and disability budget and approve that. And then we'll get to the joint. So the joint committee will be the Joint Human Services Committee and the Joint Human Services Board for both of them. And then it'll go to Finance and Administration. And then we'll go in November to hopefully get it adopted.
And I would imagine Brookside and Willowbrook is going to be a big topic of conversation this year.
I would imagine. So Brookside and Willowbrook is very different than the rest because they're more business-like, so we have them in a separate proprietary fund. It's easier to project with them, but because of COVID, the industry has changed, and people are not going into the nursing home like they used to. Is the industry going to bounce back? I think that's the biggest question. Is it going to bounce back to the numbers? Is it not going to bounce back? Leading Age, which is does a lot with nursing homes, they say yes, it's going to bounce back once we get past this COVID stuff. So, yeah.
But we're still dealing with deficits.
Right now, they're in a deficit. Yes.
Both?
Nope, not Willowbrook. Willowbrook is 23, what we budgeted at, they're at 23, they're pretty much full. Assisted living is not seeing the same industry change as the nursing home is. So Willowbrook is actually going way ahead of budget.
What about the other, the physical therapy or the release from the hospital?
Yeah, so there's some issues with that as well. So that's the Medicare stay. So the Medicare stay is a medical, they've gone to the hospital, they've been admitted for 3 days, now they can be going to the nursing home and Medicare will cover it. I believe what they're seeing is a lot of times right now is hospitals aren't admitting, they're putting them in observation mode. If they're in observation mode, they don't qualify for a Medicare stay at a nursing home. So that affects our Medicare, and Medicare is where they can make money. Medicare, because Medicare is an all-inclusive, they pay us one rate, but we are in charge of all their medical bills mm-hmm. while they're there.
Do you need to get that back on?
I think I'm okay. I know, I hate that stupid thing. As soon as it times out, because I haven't been touching it, it disconnects me. I believe I've hit upon everything I was going to talk about, so any questions, more questions, or anything you think I need to hit upon?
So going back to the American Recovery Act again, we think we're getting $32 million. Is that a for sure thing?
Yes.
Yes.
And do we know when we're getting it?
They have part of it now.
Yeah, so it's for sure numbers each county is getting. They know the numbers is $33 million. Half of it probably was already paid, and then the other half has to be at least a year out, a year or later. These funds are good for expenses through 2024.
And are they designated specifically for?
No, nope, this is completely different funding, not at all like CARES. Like CARES was covering specific stuff, very specific. This funding is really, there's four different categories. But it's going to take a lot of, I think, collaboration between committees and people on what they want to utilize this for. They recommend one-time kind of purchases because it's a one-time kind of funding. But yeah, there's going to definitely need to be a lot of collaboration because it's going to be different programs. It's going to be, everybody's doing different stuff and what are other counties doing, but.
It'll need to come before a committee and full county board.
Does it have to be spent within a certain period of time?
They cover expenses through the end of 2024.
So yeah. None of that has been committed.
No.
At this point.
No,
it can't be because.
Right.
Of,
I just wanted to be clear. Like.
Yeah.
When you say we've gotten half of it, sometimes people would think.
It's sitting
oh,
there. Oh, yeah.
Right. But it's yeah.
There are restrictions on it. There are categories on it, but there it's not at all like the CARES funding. Like.
Right.
Specific.
CARES funding was more reimbursement.
Pretty much, yes.
This,
yes.
Is,
this is
how are you going to spend it?
Yes, how are you going to boost stuff in your community? And it's really going to be I think they would have to put a committee together and get community involvement and all that, but
I would think
that's
so.
At the higher level than me.
And then it has to be presented to us to approve. Any other questions? What?
But. Looking for a commitment, but it's fine.
No, was this helpful this evening? Did it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Very good.
Okay. So, is there any other questions for Tim?
Point, so.
Pardon?
I've got a pretty steep learning curve.
Oh.
And John and I, after the budget's released, after the county exec gives his, we always have an open door that anybody that wants to come and talk about more details and doesn't understand, we're always open to setting up that meeting. It just has to be after the county exec presents what's going to be proposed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there no other questions then? Tammy, thank you very much.
Of course.
Yeah,
it was
you.
Really great. Is there any other business to discuss? If not, do I have a motion to adjourn?
Jim.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tammy. That was good.
You're
is
welcome.
This
Mary?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. What
kicking that damn person.
He's a liar with me.